We are going to talk about anger this weekend, and I am looking forward to it. I will tell you, so I don't know if you remember, but I usually practice with a topic for about a year or so, and then I create a non-residential, and then I use that same non-residential in different places. And so, whenever I'm invited to come teach somewhere, I use the same one. So I taught this weekend at Spirit Rock a couple of weekends ago, and it was difficult. I learned some things. That was the first time, and I learned quite a few things. So I taught it last weekend, and it was beautiful. And so my hope is that I've learned some things here, and this weekend will be the same. It's difficult to talk about anger. It's difficult to talk about anger with Buddhists and people who practice in the Buddhist tradition even more, because it's difficult for us to even acknowledge anger is in the room. So there's some things that I learned that I think will help guide us a bit. So the plan is tonight, I want to talk about my framing. So we're going to sit here a little bit for about 40 minutes. What time do we go to? 8:30? Is that what we go to? 8:30? Okay, so
Yes.
we'll sit for a half hour. And then we're going to talk a little bit about anger. We're going to talk about I want to talk about I want to talk about anger. And I want to talk about my understanding of anger and how it is that I've come to this understanding that anger is really a gift. It really is one of the best gifts we have if we learn to open up to it. And but the unfolding of it as a gift comes when we practice tomorrow and Sunday. And Sunday is only going to be half a day. We're going to go from 9 to 1 because I learned from the Spirit Rock Retreat that you need some downtime from all of it. I mean, at some point we have to say, that's enough. That's it. I'm not talking about it anymore. And decompress. And so I think it'll be a gentle practice tomorrow and Sunday. It's not going to be some hard, mental it's not going to be some hard, kind of like trauma filled, like I need a therapy session afterwards. It's not that. But it's difficult to talk about something like anger because we don't necessarily hold anger as a Buddhist community as a good thing. And so there's a way in which we can eat, it can all of us avoid it in some way. And so just the fact that we're talking about it carries with it its own weight. I can't really give a, usually when I come to do a non-residential, I'm like, okay, we're going to sit and walk and sit and walk and sit and walk. And but it doesn't really go like that with this practice, because when we're together and we're practicing together, there's a flow that has to happen, a continuity of it. And so what I can tell you is that it's going to be an afternoon practice and a, I mean, a morning practice and an afternoon practice, and then another morning practice on Sunday. And so we will practice a little bit. I will give a talk in the beginning because it seems to be easier to kind of like step into it from where I'm coming from. And so I'll give a talk, and then we'll do some practice and some walking and some practice and some walking. And then we'll talk about it. We'll have some question and answers, and people can reflect how they were on the practice period. So think of it as a kind of a framing, and then we're going to practice for a tight little section of time, probably like an hour and a half, and then we'll talk about how that unfolded for people. And then we go to lunch, we come back, and we talk about the framing, and then we practice. And then we have some question and answers or comments about how it was. And that's what we're going to do for three periods, morning, afternoon, and morning tomorrow. Let's see if there's anything else that I want to. No, I think that's we'll just kind of let it unfold. I think it'll be, we'll see how it goes, but I've been looking forward to it all week. So, yeah, that just brings with it a sense of, you know, appreciation for what it is that that we can do together, what we can see together. So, let's sit a little bit here and let's start there. So let me give you some, let's just do a little bit of grounding here. Because we're leaving from talking random, ordinary stuff to coming into this practice. And so we need to actually create a level of seclusion for a few moments. Let's see if you can get a sense with your eyes closed or your eyes lowered that you're letting go of the outside world for just a few minutes. You can pick it right back up before you know it. But just for a few minutes, we're going to let the outside world go. I don't have to worry about getting anything done. I don't have to worry about what's going to happen next. Don't worry about anything. Just let all of our ordinary life just go for a minute. We don't really need to focus on it right now. What we need to focus on is getting a sense that I'm sitting in this body. So what would it take for you to know that you're sitting here? You know, that you could turn your attention and actually connect to the fact that you're sitting here and have a sense of it. It means something that we're sitting here doing nothing. It means something. It's not just kind of like something that I do to make me better. We're cultivating something. Learning to understand something. So to know that we're sitting becomes a big deal. Maybe you could feel the heaviness of the body. Maybe you could feel the weight of your arms or the weight of your legs. You can sense into the underside of the arms or the underside of the legs and just feel the gravitational pull. Maybe you can feel the bones and the hardness of the bones. Even as you sit on a cushion, your skin is soft, the flesh is soft, and yet even through skin, flesh, cushion, you can still feel the hardness of the sit bones. You can still feel the hardness of the bones in the feet, the hardness of the bones in the hands, shoulders, and the torso of the back. So this learning to feel into this hardness, this heaviness of the body, it's like learning to access the earth. So we have this seclusion by turning away from the outside world, and we have this groundedness in the earth. Can you get a sense of that? You don't have to go anywhere. You don't have to try to make your meditation be a certain way. Just have to have a sense of being firmly grounded right here. When you have that sense of being grounded here, you can just sit here. And notice if thoughts arise, breathing, sounds, just whatever arises. Keep your main focus on the fact that you're just sitting here, secluded. And then let the world just unfold, the moments unfold as they do. It's not the thinking is a problem. It's the getting lost in thinking and forgetting that you're just sitting here. Just keep your awareness sitting here. And then I'll ring the bell in just a few moments to bring us back. A quote by David White. Anger is the deepest form of compassion. Anger is the deepest form of compassion for another, for the world, for the self, for a life, for the body, for a family, and for all our ideals, all vulnerable, and all possibly about to be hurt. Stripped of physical imprisonment and violent reaction, anger is the purest form of care. The internal living flame of anger always illuminates what we belong to, what we wish to protect, and what we are willing to hazard ourselves for. This quote by David White is the first time I ever heard a quote that most codifies what I believe about anger now, after years of being in relationship with anger. This quote codifies it for me. I really think anger is compassion. And it points to what is most tender to us, what is most important to us. It points to where we want to put our energies. It's a flame, and it is a flame of caring, but it is trapped in a kind of imprisonment, or it is expressed in a very violent kind of way. And that imprisonment and that violent reaction is what gives anger a bad rap. And I hope over the course of this weekend, we can see it differently. We can see what anger actually can do for us. So we're going to use David's quote a lot and remember it and its possibilities. What I want to do tonight is set a framing, because I didn't always think of anger this way. I think of anger this way now, but I didn't always think of anger this way. For a long time, I had a completely different relationship with it. So I want to kind of take us through a little bit of a journey as to how I came to this understanding. And then we'll practice over the weekend to see if we can see anger in a different way. I was raised in a house that was full of anger. My father was very aggressive around anger. I would call him a rageaholic. And my mother was very passive. She always seemed to sugarcoat everything. So she never seemed like she was angry. My father always seemed like he was angry. So I grew up in a world where anger was very much a normal part of existence. And I didn't think anything was wrong with it. It's not like I looked at my parents and thought, oh, you guys are angry. You need some therapy. I didn't come to that understanding until much, much later in my life. So when I grew up, I grew up thinking, oh, this is the way we're supposed to be. Because, you know, my parents got exactly what they wanted. My father could get whatever he wanted. My mother got whatever she wanted. And so instead of growing up thinking that anger, or even knowing what anger was, I just grew up thinking that intimidation and force were the ways that you got what you wanted. So the more intimidation and force you use, the more you get what you want. That's simple as that. And of course, I always thought what I wanted was the right thing, was the best thing for everybody. I never really thought of myself as a problem person at all. And then if I grew up in the American Black church, which has lots of energy, big energy. And so a lot of the anger that you would have in life about just being Black in America got translated or transformed from its aggression to excitement and inspiration and joy in church service. So there was this world that I lived in that had a lot of anger and a lot of big energy, and it all seemed very normal. Seemed like this is the way it's supposed to be. But I also grew up in a very abusive house. So even though my parents were, you know, I guess relatively good people, if you think about it. I mean, I don't think my mother ever meant any harm to me, but I don't even know if my father meant the harm to me, but they were clearly dangerous people, and they definitely created a lot of harm in their children. There was a big family, so there were 10 kids of us. And so they did a lot of destruction and caused a lot of harm because of their inability to deal with their anger, I think. I think in retrospect, that's what it was all about. They never learned how to deal with their anger. And so they just took their anger out on all of us. And we were just, you know, we were too, you know, we were kids. So we just pretty much sucked it up. But growing up, I didn't actually think, oh, my parents are bad people. I just think that's just the way they are. This is the way we're supposed to be. So as I went through life, everything about my life was just big energy. That's the way I called it, you know, big energy. I was very intimidating, and I just had a lot of big energy. So I was in the military. I went to law school. I became a prosecutor. These are all jobs where you have to have a lot of big energy. And that's just what I did, because that's who I was. But underneath all this, there was this seething rage that was happening all the time, all the time, all the time. And that seething rage was something I had learned how to skillfully control, so I could control my anger. That's how I kept from being like my father or being like my mother, because I controlled it and I managed it. I had a degree of, I was in charge of my own anger. So what brought me to the Dhamma was not anger. It was sadness. I could not manage my sadness. I couldn't manage the disappointment. And I went to the Dhamma to try to find a way to be less what I considered vulnerable. Sadness, disappointment. That kind of stuff made you weak and vulnerable. Anger made you powerful. So I tried to get rid of the disappointment and sadness. Some kind of, you know, I need some control over that. But the anger, I didn't have any thoughts about changing it. I spent 10 years practicing by myself, so it's not a big deal. Then I went to a Sangha, Seattle Insight. Oh my God. It was so quiet. You know how I don't know if you guys are like this at Victoria in your normal sits, but in the old days, you used to go in quiet. You didn't say nothing to nobody. You sat for 40 minutes, nobody saying anything. You listen to a Dhamma talk for 40 minutes or whatever. You had question and answer after that. So after 2 hours, you left. So you sat in silence with other people for 2 hours and then you left. And it's only been, I'd say, in the last maybe 10 years or so that we've been getting to make a big deal about community Dharma practice being more social. But for years and years and years, community Dharma was as quiet as a retreat. You just did not speak to anyone. So you kind of knew people if you volunteered. But if you volunteer, you go in silence, stay silent for 2 hours, leave silent. I don't know if it was like that in Victoria. I'm just saying most of the centers I went to in the States, the inside centers, that's the way the practice was. So I used to have a lot of pent up anger. But at the time, I wasn't calling it anger. I was calling it just big energy. So how do I go into this quiet place with all this big energy and be quiet? So managing that energy became a big deal. It was all about being quieter, 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 stiller, 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 stiller. And at the same time, work on the disappointment, work on all of that sadness. And it just came to a head at some point. And I just start feeling a lot of anxiety and panic. And so the anxiety and panic, I had to work on that. And took me, you know, several years to work on the anxiety and panic. But I still don't think there's anything. I don't think I'm angry. Nothing wrong with that. I got that under control. And then my nephew got killed in he was an innocent bystander. And I could not control my anger any longer. I was pretty much afraid I was going to lose my job, afraid I was going to lose it on somebody at the Sangha, afraid I was just going to be ostracized because I could not manage this rage any longer. And so I went to my teacher to deal with it, and he basically said, don't worry about the anger, Tori, just work on your irritation. And I'm like, yeah, no, you don't understand. I don't have irritation. I go from 0 to 90. So it's like I'm nothing, and then I'm enraged. That's it. He goes, you have some irritation there. You work on the irritation. Look for that. And I'm thinking, he doesn't get it. You know, maybe he has to be a Black woman or a Black person in America. Maybe then you'd get it, but you don't get it. He just kept saying, Tori, your anger is the least of your concerns. By the time you feel your anger, you've already passed something. And you want to know what that place is that you're passing. And that you can manage. That you can understand. That you can come to see and practice with. And that, once you come to an understanding around that, then you will have an understanding of anger. And you will realize that anger is not the problem. I didn't really believe him, but, you know, I had been with him a long time. And so he and I were close, and he was a very good teacher for me. And so I trusted him. And so I started investigating anger. I started looking at it, and I found some things about it that I want to talk about. So that's what I want to practice with this weekend, just to begin to encourage you, like me, to practice with anger, whatever, however anger shows up for you. It doesn't have to show up like me. You know, mine is the violent outward. Yours may be the imprisonment. So, but there's something that's happening with anger that I want to talk a little bit about. One, what we call anger is aversion. Anger itself is an emotion. We're going to talk more about this tomorrow, but it's an emotion. So it's ephemeral. Just comes and goes, just like that. Doesn't hang around. But because of the nature of that emotion, we have a lot of aversion around anger, attached to anger, glued to anger. And that aversion creates these three, I guess you could say, aspects of anger that makes it difficult to be with. The first aspect that aversion gives to anger is what I call, it's a subtle expander, meaning that you can have something, some little thing can happen to you, but if you don't pay attention, that little thing will begin to subtly grab a hold of other things and other things and other things and other things. It's like if you roll a little snow down the hill and it begins to pick up more snow and it gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. It's like that. So what we call anger is this subtle expander, and it begins to expand and seep into all kinds of areas in our life, in our space, in our world, in our understanding. So what we're trying to do as a practitioner is begin to notice this. So some ways that it expands is if you win an argument, have some little disagreement with somebody, and you win, that is an expander, because you will have to win the next time. There becomes this necessity to win in the mind. You know, you can see it with during COVID. If you think you're right about whether you wear a mask or not, then every time you see somebody without a mask on, if you think you should wear a mask, every time you saw somebody without a mask on, it would just show up. And they would, every time, even if the person was two blocks away, not even near you, you see somebody way over there without a mask on, because you're always right. It expands and expands, and it just keeps making more and more enemies out of everyone that doesn't do what you believe it should be done. So this is aversion. It creates enemies out of space. The next thing that it does is a trickster of mind. This aversion is a trickster. So what I thought is, first of all, it's a very powerful and empowering kind of energy. Even the anger that we tuck, for those of you that hold it into yourself and get mad at yourself, it is a powerful energy. And that energy has a sense of self-righteousness. So even the self-righteousness of outer for people like me, and the self-righteousness that you are flat out wrong, you are a terrible person, it's absolute. That same self-righteousness shows up for those of you that turn that anger inward. The self-righteousness and the power of it, the definitive nature of it, is a trickster. Because what it's really doing is that oftentimes for people that turn that anger outward, there are what I call the weaker, vulnerable emotions we don't want to feel. So we don't have to feel that. We're okay feeling the anger. So I was okay feeling anger my whole life, but don't let me feel hurt, sad, or disappointed. That's like the end of the world. But anger, I can feel that anytime. But some people, it's a trickster. It will do the opposite. You will feel sad and disappointed and, very, very hurt, but you will not admit that you're angry. And so instead of you feeling the anger, you feel everything else that is allowable. So the trickster of the mind is that anger is nebulous enough that it allows us, or the avert, it allows us to ignore so-called anger or ignore the other emotions, and instead we focus on the ones, the aspect of aversion that we feel is allowable. And so that becomes our go-to emotional energy over and over and over and over and over. But if you learn how to uncouple anger from its aversion, just like you learn how to be mindful of what the subtle expansion that can happen, you can cut that expansion off. If you learn how to uncouple aversion from anger, then you can work on the aversion and pay less attention to anger. That's what Rodney was pointing to. Excuse me, was like, don't worry about the anger. The second thing is that oh, I'm sorry, I mixed this up. The one I did just now is the facade. That's the covering that anger puts over our emotions. It's a facade. So depending on whether you're like me and you don't like the lesser emotions, then the facade that the mind puts over my lesser emotions is anger. And for those of you that don't like to admit that you're angry, the facade that the mind puts over your anger is sadness or hurt or disappointment or what I would call a lesser emotion. But the trickster of mind is a little bit different. The mind will convince us that the anger is justified in the thing that we're angry at. So, like the mask thing, somebody wears a mask, doesn't wear a mask when we think they should wear a mask, or they wear a mask and we think they shouldn't wear a mask, and everybody's getting all mad about it, right? So there's all this explosion around it, as if it's all about the mask, but it's not. Because the mind is tricking us to believe that the issue is the person or the thing, when in reality, the mind is generating its own anger. It's producing its own anger out of thin air. And the way you can begin to tell that it's producing it out of thin air is because if anger was actually attached to a person or a thing, then everyone would get angry. Everyone would get angry about that. We wouldn't even have this whole some people want masks and some people don't. We wouldn't even have it. We would all be mad at one thing. But it's not like that because it's very personal. It's very much an opinionated mind thing of your own conditioning and your own mind. So the more we learn to see how the mind is corrupting us or how the mind is corrupt, the more we can begin to understand the nature of the way anger shows up for us. Let's see what else I wanted to bring out. So how I kind of got to this understanding of anger as being compassion is kind of a weird thing, that anger is compassion. But there was a moment when I had a complete change in my understanding on anger. I don't assume that we are going to have that kind of moment over the course of this weekend, but I want to encourage you, inspire you to practice with anger so that you can have a moment of clarity and understanding around how anger shows up with you. Just when that's going to happen, who knows? But I had a moment when my nephew, I live in a little studio, and my nephew and my niece and her husband, my nephew, their three kids and my sister all lived in my little studio with me for like 3 months until they moved to Denver. So they were staying with me because their lease was up on their apartment, and they didn't want to rent a hotel or a motel or find another month-to-month lease. They just stayed with me instead so they could save the money. Great idea. Theoretically, having that many people in a little tiny apartment is kind of difficult, just bumping into each other. And my nephew is a cook, but he's one of those kind of cooks that goes in the kitchen and messes up every pot possible, flour and stuff all over the cabinets, but that's domestic duties to clean up all of that. So he does the cooking and it is good, but the mess, all the women have to go in and take care of. So one morning I get up, he cooked some meal that was great. I get up the next day and I go in the kitchen to make some tea. Everybody's gone to work. Kids are gone to school. He's the only one here. And he's sitting on the floor looking at his cell phone. And I go into the kitchen and I see this mess. And I am livid. It just livid at this mess in the kitchen, beyond control. And I immediately start trying to get the dishes out of the sink so I can wash all these dishes. I'm so mad. And I hear this rageful voice, just this deep, like a heavy voice. And I think it's someone in the house. And I asked him, I said, Gary, is someone in the house? And he goes, no, Auntie, just you and me. So I'm like, okay, wait a minute now. Because I hear this voice cussing out, just cussing. I stopped. I go in the bedroom. I lay down on the bed. I'm like, Tori, we are going to feel this anger. We are going to stay here with this anger. So you have to love anger to get to this place. Not love it like, I'm so happy I'm angry. But you have to have a degree of compassion and kindness to let this energy be in your space. And it's okay that it's here, right? It's not bad. It has to be a receptive, allowing energy. So I just kept laying on the bed telling myself, it's okay, Tori, it's okay. We're angry. We're not going to hurt anyone. We're in the room by ourselves. We're good. Let's just see what this anger is really doing. What is this thing that I got to control, I don't understand, I'm so worried about right now? You come on in, it's okay. It's so painful. It's so painful, it's so painful, it's so painful. My whole body is racking with all this pain, and I just lay there like, so painful, like, it's okay, you just stay here. And then I saw it. I was twisting my arms. I was twisting my arms, twisting my legs. I could feel myself twisting, 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 twisting. And I just relaxed. I just stopped. And there was no anger. And then 2 minutes later, oh, twisting, 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 twisting. And then I would just stop. And I could feel that I was doing this whole, I was in so much pain, but I was doing it to me. And when I stopped twisting, there was no pain. I burst into laughter because it was so obvious to me that I was twisting my body. I couldn't even understand why. When I wasn't twisting, I wasn't mad. When I was twisting, I was mad. So I'm laying there realizing how ridiculous it looked for me to be twisting my body. And I'm laughing, and I finally get up and I go to the door and I tell my nephew, I want to cook something and get some tea. Can you go clean up the kitchen? And he goes, oh, sure, Auntie, I'll do it right now. And he gets up and he goes in the kitchen. And I'm laying in the bed thinking to myself, it cannot be like this. This is not, it cannot be that this is what it is. There's got to be some big thing out there that justifies all the anger. Some big thing. No, I'm telling you, I needed the dishes done. I was mad that he didn't do the dishes and that the kitchen was a mess. That clearly happened. But the pain associated with it was aversion. It is the nature of aversion. It is a hatred, a dislike, and our entire body begins to twist into knots because we hate it. And the reason why we have to twist into knots is because the kitchen was in fact dirty, right? So that is the truth. And I can't accept that. So instead, I'm twisting the body with all of this rage about something. When I stopped twisting, when I uncoupled the aversion from the anger, mad about the kitchen, now I can articulate whatever it is I need to articulate. There are some things we can't just tell our nephew, can you please go clean up the kitchen? Like the war in Ukraine. I get mad about that too. I can't just say, Mr. Putin, can you please just back it up? We've had enough. We haven't even healed from the pandemic. Can you just stop that? I can't do that. So the mind, if it's attached to aversion, it will just be racking you with pain because it will not let go. It will not let go, not let go, not let go. When you decouple aversion from anger, it doesn't mean that you all of a sudden are not mad about something. What it means is you are not twisting your body into pain. You are not twisting your mind. You are not punishing yourself because you are angry. That's what I realized the mind was doing. I was punishing myself because I was mad that my nephew did not clean up the kitchen, and I couldn't just go get my tea. This is what I want us to talk about. I don't want you to necessarily have some episode where you realize the whole understanding of it. What I don't want you to even have to get that mad. What I want you to do is to open your understanding to the possibility that anger is a friend, that anger can actually help you see something about aversion. Because when you see the aversive aspect coupled to anger, aversion the Dhamma can work on. Anger the Dhamma cannot, because anger is just an emotion, and the Dhamma certainly can't make Gary go in there and clean the kitchen up. I have to actually say something or it's not going to happen. What the anger, what the practice does is help us let go of the aversion. And that is completely liberating. That is what Dhamma is. It is for the release of grasping mind, the release of clinging. And aversion is clinging. That's really what we're going to talk about this weekend, is how to release this clinging. I can think of no other time in the world since I've been alive that it's important to practice with this. Because we are in a time where the world needs a giant therapy session, some kind of therapy session we need, because there is so much yelling and screaming going on at random people. Maybe not you guys. That's right, Canadians. You guys are all nice and sweet. This is America I'm talking about. But there's so much yelling, so much anger that's going on in the world, so much hatred. And if we do not practice decoupling this aversion from anger, we will be stuck in a world where we take other people's anger. There's a famous story called The Reviler in the Buddha. So the Buddha had this this guy who's called The Reviler. He had a student, and that student left him and went and asked Buddha to be his preceptor. Took his vows from Buddha. And this guy called The Reviler, he got really, really mad. So he goes to where the Buddha's teaching, and in this disrespectful way, he just walks into the hall. Just imagine you got the Buddha at the hall, you know, where you guys are doing your weekly talk, and some guy comes walking in mad, yelling, talking, goes up to the Buddha, won't even bow or anything in respect, and he's basically yelling at the Buddha, saying that he's not he's just a terrible person, nobody should listen to him. So the Buddha asked him, so I think the Reviler goes, well, what do you have to say about that, Gotama? And so the Buddha asked him, says, I want to ask you a question. If somebody comes to your house and, you know, they offer you some gift and you don't want it. What do you do? I mean, you offer them a gift. That's right. You offer them a gift and they don't want it. What happens to the gift? And the Reviler goes, I keep it. It's mine. And he goes, just like that. I'm not taking your gift that you're offering me. You keep it and send him out, right? We are human beings, all of us. And just like if I were to start crying, you would feel the sadness of my tears. If I share some great moment in mudita, you would feel the laughter and joy I'm feeling. Just like that, if I'm angry, you feel the anger. And we are living in a world with so many angry people. We have to guard ourselves from carrying their anger for them. We have to leave their anger with them. And the only way to do that is to decouple this anger with aversion, because aversion, it's an expander, it's a trickster, and it's a facade. And it can trap us in it and we get stuck. So that's where I want to go this weekend. That's what I want to do. That's what I want to talk about. I don't want to talk about all the bad. It is bad. We're going to talk about something bad, but I want to do it in a jovial, kind of a lighthearted way, in a way to help us begin to see the possibility that we do not have to live in the heaviness of the aversion that exists in the world right now. We can live with the difficulty of it. We don't have to make the world light and fluffy. It's painful right now. There's a whole bunch of stuff going on that's painful. It's scary. It's hard. It's all that. But we don't have to twist our bodies into knots and create intense pain simply because we live in difficult and challenging times. So that's what I want to help us do. So let's take a moment to just sit here quietly. Just a moment. You heard a lot. You got to see what you think about all this. So we may go over about 5 minutes, and I understand if you want to leave, but I would like to hear from some of you, how you feel about what you're hearing and where your heart is right now. I got to keep checking in with you, make sure I know where you're at so you don't get too caught in your aversion and my big energy, because I have some pretty big energy, so I don't want you to get caught in that either. But I do want to know how you're doing.